Gee, I really wonder what the future looks like. Somehow I just have the feeling everything will work out just fine, don't you? No, not really. Maybe, yeah. Well, we will continue with James Howard Kunstler. His book is Too Much Magic. And his website is Kunstler, Kunstler. I always like to say, I like to do the European, Kunstler. No, Kunstler.com, K-U-N-S-T-L-E-R.com. You'll find his blog interesting, and he's very interesting. So I want to talk about where our political system is going, and if there's a, as the old Thunderbird song goes, why get up? Find out if there's any reason to get up. Maybe you have some advice on how to cushion the abrupt landing. So stay with us for our final hour. We'll be back. This is the one, the only Coast to Coast AM. James Howard Kunstler, tell me, well, if the paradigm just vanishing then? If we say capitalism, socialism, and communism, they all kind of operate the same in the end. I mean, I don't. That's a discussion in itself for 3 hours, but what will take its place? I mean, you've indicated that maybe this current political system isn't really working for us anymore.
Well, things change, and we've had a certain system that's been going the way it has for, you know, a couple of hundred years. As far as the political parties go, it seems to me that people are very dissatisfied with both parties. And we're in a very strange situation that, to me, resembles the 1850s, the period before America went through its previous great convulsion, which was the Civil War. And, you know, in the 1850s, you had, in the beginning of the decade, you had a party called the Whigs, who basically, you know, ran things in America. And they disappeared completely before the end of the decade. And I wonder if one or both of our current major parties is going to just vanish from irrelevance, from simply not being able to articulate the terms of the problem that we face. Both of them are doing a pretty good job right now of making themselves irrelevant.
Okay. Well, let's jump into something completely different. This global warming thing has been all the rage and has merged into brief moments of hysteria. Where do you see that impacting our civilization simultaneous with economic collapse, you know, and just general Armageddon?
Well, first of all, I don't think that it's important as to, well, it is important, but I don't think that we need to argue about whether it's caused by human activities or not. When all is said and done, you're simply left with the facts of what's happening. You know, and what's happening in the USA right now is that we're having a very unusual year for weather. We had a winter with no winter, and we're having a summer with no rain and tremendous heat. And that's got to make an impression on some people. So, you know, how are we going to deal with that? We don't know. You know, it may turn out that the crop-growing areas of the United States can produce less than we're used to producing, and it may go on for a long time. Or, you know, remains to be seen. The trend seems to be that something is happening. It seems to be self-evident that something's going on. You know, if you talk to people in Illinois and Iowa, to you know, today, you'll meet some people who are pretty alarmed about what's going on where they live, and what the weather is doing to them, especially the farmers.
What do you see going on as far as unhappiness generally, or maybe great elation as we approach the elections?
Right now it seems to me that people just can barely pay attention to this incredibly boring contest so far. between two guys who I don't think are really that popular among even their own groups. And there's plenty of room for events to steal the thunder of the election before it happens. The situation in Europe is very tenuous. It doesn't appear that there's any way that they can get through the fall in Europe without having some kind of a major default. They're just sort of at the end of their, they've run out of tricks, and they've run out of accounting tricks. So, if there's a really serious banking catastrophe between now and then, it's certainly going to affect the United States. All of the industrialized world is in contraction right now, in the sense that they're producing a lot less stuff, and people don't have the means to consume as much stuff as they were before. And that, I think, is liable to get worse, and that'll probably affect the election. I don't know if it'll make Mitt Romney more popular. He seems to be, in many ways, a deeply unlikable character. I mean, he tries to be genial, and he puts himself across that way, but I just don't think that he connects with people. And I'm personally very disappointed in the president, and especially for one particular reason, because he did nothing to reestablish the rule of law in money matters in this country, in our financial system.
Yeah, I was really surprised that the House said they were all about regulating the auditing the Fed. And the Senate said, never get through the Senate. I can't understand why they wouldn't want the Fed audited unless, somebody's picking up some checks that they are a little worried about being seen. I mean, that's call me simple, but that's about the only thing I can think of.
There's probably plenty of corruption, just sheer unadulterated corruption in the background of all that. But, on the other hand, when you have a financial system that's run completely on accounting fraud, basically everybody's complicit. Everybody in the system is complicit in that. And we just don't want to know at this point, because if it became clear that the accounting fraud ran so deep, we could turn around and find ourselves in our own financial meltdown here without the help of Europe. So I have no idea how the election is going to break. I don't particularly think that the president is in a very good position, and Mr. Romney could win. I don't think people like him very much. I think just generally people are disenchanted with both parties. As I began to say a little while ago, I think that we're kind of on the brink of a sort of a national political convulsion of some kind or other. Remember, the people in 1860 didn't know what kind of convulsion they were on the brink of either. They certainly didn't know that they were going to be engaging in the first great industrial slaughter of the modern age.
I don't think people have any idea how bloody that war was.
Oh, it was just beyond belief.
And went on for years after it was over.
Yeah, with, and with battles in which, 10, 20,000 people would get killed in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
The scale of the slaughter was amazing. But, the lead up to it is interesting in this sense that you have these political parties that are kind of weak and ill-defined in the late 1850s. And you have this new Republican Party. It's only a few years old. They've run one guy, John C. Fremont, for president in 1856. He was a Western explorer, popular, kind of dashing, romantic character. He didn't win the election, obviously. But then, this guy comes along out of nowhere, really. Abraham Lincoln, a guy who had one term as a congressman in the 1840s, I believe, and really had not been a political office holder after that. And, he comes out of nowhere, and he's able to articulate the terms of what the convulsion is going to be. And, the terms are that it's about slavery, And contrary to a lot of rewritten history, the Civil War was about slavery, and it was about whether the United States was going to continue to be a slave nation or not. And, you know, Lincoln was able to articulate that, and once he did it, of course, the convulsion began. So what we're seeing in our political leaders is an inability to articulate what the terms of our troubles really are. And sooner or later, some figure will come along and will articulate it. I hope that he's not a demonic figure like Adolf Hitler or Mussolini or Stalin. You know, one would hope that we could do better than that.
How far off do you think we are? I mean, I think we covered this already. He said it could happen any time, but practically speaking,
I think we're in the zone where anything can happen. We're in the zone when the financial system could go through a cascading collapse. That would be a fairly rapid and catastrophic thing. You know, and when that happens, it's not just a matter of banks closing. It's a matter of trade stopping because, you know, you can no longer import things in long manufacturing and resource supply chains, and you can't get letters of credit, and banks refuse to deal with each other, and pretty soon the supermarket shelves are empty. And when that happens, you know, you've really got a serious problem.
You know, I was talking with a young man in his 20s, and he said, green energy, you're late. I'm thinking maybe the easiest way to go green now, since these technologies seem to be so expensive to produce, and since so many of these, I mean, there's some contributors to it, but, you know, and we always hear about the, you know, the Solyndras. You know, you only hear about the big failures. You don't really hear that much about the little successes all along. But it seems like the easiest way to go green now is just the tap to the gasoline pump gets turned off. Then we'll be going green real quick.
The thing is that'll happen. But the key to understanding the alternative energy scene is simply this. We're going to use everything we possibly can, and we're going to be disappointed by what they can do for us. We're not going to run Walmart and the Interstate Highway System and Walt Disney World and the U.S. Army and suburbia on any combination of solar, wind, tar sands, Bakken shale oil, shale gas, used French fried potato oil, algae secretions, or the other things we're fantasizing about. You know, we'll do everything we can, but we're not going to run that stuff, or even a substantial fraction of it.
Right.
And, you know, and the conclusion is not to get depressed or wring your hands. You know, the conclusion is we have to seriously make other arrangements for everyday life. Let me give you an example. You know, the only thing that we're putting any mental effort into thinking about as far as our transportation predicament is we're trying to find other ways to run all the cars. Well, that's not going to happen. We're not going to run all the cars by other means. It's not going to happen. And one of the things we could do is repair the conventional railroad system in America.
I was about to ask, why do you think we've never invested in high-speed rail?
Well, because we didn't want to, because the American people weren't interested. They wanted to drive cars, and it's as simple as that. It isn't any more complicated. It wasn't a conspiracy. It was as simple as that. The American people weren't interested. And now that we're in a situation where it would seem like a good idea, we're too broke. The capital's not there. We're not going to do it. We may start.
Oh, Jerry Brown doesn't think so. He wants to put
we'll start a project, too. We'll start them, but there's no guarantee that we're going to finish them. The money's going to be there to finish them. And right now, you know, we're thinking that we'll start it. But, you know, it doesn't mean it's going to get done. However, we have a perfectly good conventional railroad system lying out there rusting in the rain, waiting to be fixed. This issue needs to be dragged into the political arena. It would benefit people of all classes of American society. It would put scores of thousands of people to work at meaningful jobs at many different levels. And it's a project that we could do as a people to demonstrate to ourselves that we're competent and that we can face the future with some confidence. But we don't do it, and it's not in the political arena. And the fact that we're not talking about it shows that we are not a serious people.
Is it just me, or do these politicians, regardless of which side of the aisle they're on, have their moments of absolute infantile behavior. I mean, I've never seen a maturity level this low since junior high school. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Well, it's pretty bad, but the American public, is pretty infantile. Right now, the reigning belief in American society is that when you wish upon a star, your dreams come true. And the companion belief to that it's possible to get something for nothing.
You mean it's not?
That's the reason that Wall Street behaves the way it does.
Right.
And when you combine these two ideas, that when you wish upon a star, you'll get something for nothing, you get the general attitude of the American people. And so, you know, they have gotten the leadership that that they deserve.
Well, how will we read your blog if the net goes down because our power grid has failed?
Well, then you won't.
We're going to have to
go to a local newsletter or something.
Get a flock of pigeons, and we'll just rotate them around the country.
I'll make other arrangements to express myself.
Okay, excellent. Let me ask you this. What about the future of nuclear power in this country? The reactor's getting old. You got San Onofre and Cali's got problems. You got one around Canton's got problems. And
very troubling for obvious reasons. You know, first of all, we're all keenly aware of what happened in Japan, and that story's not even over. You know, there are plenty of ramifications yet to come from that. But
yes.
You know, there are things that the public doesn't even think about, like what would happen if the electricity was cut off to our nuclear reactors for a month. You know, if that happens, you know, basically, you can't control them. They melt down.
Do you know what's interesting? This is really strange. It's almost like catastrophe discrimination. I just read an article that Fukushima, the victims of however much exposure they got over there, because nobody's really talking. I mean, I try to communicate with people over there all the time, but they're either completely unavailable or you really can't get it. You can not even speak to anyone. I mean, you can speak to the ones that you can speak to when they're available, but they are increasingly less available.
Yep.
And they're afraid that there are genetic problems waiting for the future generation. So it's like, oh, you're from Fukushima? You can't go out with my kid. I mean, there's actually they're calling it discrimination because of radiation exposure. I mean, is that amazing or what?
Well, the problems of Fukushima now, you know, are so deep and they have such enormous implications for Japan's future. The most obvious one being that they're so nervous about nuclear power that they've taken almost all of their nuclear generating plants offline. I think they put one or two back online recently, but they're basically not running their nuclear power. And one of the things that's led to is that they don't have any fossil fuels of their own. They have to get almost everything from other countries. And so they used to have a trade surplus. They were selling cars to everybody in the world and selling other things to everybody in the world, and they had a trade surplus for decades. Now they've got a trade deficit. This is going to affect their economy enormously. And it's one of the reasons that I think that, as strange as it sounds, that Japan will find itself in an intractable situation where they will actually opt to deindustrialize because they will have no other choice. It's not necessarily going to be an easy thing, but I think it's going to happen, and it'll happen there first.
Wow. You know, it would not surprise you. They've even spoken about the possible need to evacuate not just, you know, the big cities, but the entire country. I mean, some have even speculated that some of these vast, actually unpopulated and brand new cities in China might actually house and support a fleeing Japanese population.
Well, I would find that unlikely, if only because China's economy is so unstable and so fragile that, you know, I don't think you could have that kind of demographic, massive demographic change and still have, and have a stable country. Plus, there's tremendous, lingering political and cultural animosity between the Japanese and the Chinese.
Oh, yes. All you have to do is read the history books and you'll find out.
It's a story, but I don't think it's a credible story that would happen. I think it's much more likely that that Japan would just subside into post-industrialism on its own island.
Well, when we come back, let's talk about some steps we might be able to take to make things a little bit easier as we ride through this thing. This is Coast to Coast AM. Perhaps it'll be, Peter Fonda-style shirts from the old Easy Rider movie and, long hair and easy times, and because we'll have a few more hours of leisure, think about the higher things, who knows? It could happen, right? It doesn't have to be like The Road. It doesn't have to be like, worse, like Priest with ghastly mutations and all of that. But in fact, the interesting times are upon us. Remember, it's not an old saying, it's an old curse, and behold, here they are. Maybe we'll take a couple of calls if you want to, and we'll continue on through the night with our final segment with James Howard Kunstler. He has written a recent book called Too Much Magic. Just a little bit too much, a touch too much. We'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. James, what would you like to leave us with here? Do you have a list of some way we may prepare, or can we begin shifting now into a more austere manner of living? We need to put some fuel away, stash a little cash somewhere where only we know where it is, stuff like that. What do we need to do about this?
Well, I think there are intelligent responses to this long emergency that we face, and it really represents a comprehensive set of tasks that we need to understand. They're not abstract or metaphysical. We need to grow our food differently, closer to home, probably on farms of a smaller scale with more people. We need to reactivate our local Main Street economies, because the big box stores are not going to be with us all that much longer. We have to rebuild the railroad system, the conventional railroad system in America, because the happy motoring experience is going to be dwindling. And I think people will be surprised to see that commercial aviation contracts to pretty much a shadow of what it is now. By the way, there is no other kind of hardware to fly in.
True.
We're not going to run that on solar or wind or algae secretions or batteries or anything like that. We have to do schooling differently, because our centralized schools are probably not going to make it. It was a tragic mistake that we made to centralize all the schools in America. We did it because it seemed to be a good idea at the time. It seemed like we would save on administrative costs and, we wouldn't have to have so much redundancy. But, that's actually a lesson for us, is that systems that have redundancy tend to be less fragile. And we've just created a tremendous amount of fragility in all of the linked dynamic systems that we depend on. We're going to have to manufacture some things in this country again. We have no idea how we're going to do it. My guess is that as we go further into this century, a lot of what we make will depend on hydropower, hydroelectric power, on just sheer water power. And we're going to have to probably move our stuff around on boats more than we do now. One of the things we need to do is reactivate the inland waterway system of America. For decades, we've been building condominiums and festival marketplaces and band shells and stuff on our riverfronts. We're going to have to rebuild the docks and the piers and the warehouses and the places for the boatmen to go.
Is there money for that?
Well, that's the kind of thing that can be generated on a very local, small scale community basis. You don't need to have vast investments for that. These are the kinds of emergent decisions that I think we'll make. We're going to have trouble with money, but we're not going to be completely broke. We still have some accumulated wealth. It's really a question of what we're going to direct our remaining wealth toward. Are we going to build more freeways? That's pretty silly, because whether people realize it or not, we are you know, at the end of the story of mass motoring, I know it's hard to believe, and it's such an immersive experience in America of, you know, always being around cars incessantly. But, you know, the likelihood is that we're going to get into trouble with that, and the automobile is going to be a diminishing presence in our lives. You know, hard to believe as that is.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to those individual flying machines, but I guess that's going to get put off for a while.
Yeah, not going to happen. Mm. So, I'll tell you one thing, though. This whole business about repairing the railroad system, I think Americans would be delighted to be able to go from Chicago to Boston at 90 miles an hour. If their trains, you know, left on time and arrived on time, and the stations were respectable buildings that, you know, didn't... there weren't like toilets. That was the state of the art, by the way, you know, of rail transportation by 1925. I saw a very funny newspaper article last year from my part of the country. Some agency in the state of Vermont was reporting that they had increased the average speed of a passenger train in Vermont and that it had attained a new high of 40 miles an hour. That was in the year 2011.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we're basically running on, you know, still on the 1850 level of rail transportation. So there's a lot we could do with that, and we just have a lot of work to do. We don't have time for hand-wringing. We don't have time for being crybabies. We don't have time for picking fights with each other. You know, we have an enormous to-do list that is facing us, and it is possible that the adult generations now will just be too feckless to tackle them. But, you know, at some point, we're going to produce a generation capable of being heroic and capable of getting down to business and capable of being serious, and they are going to start doing some of these things.
How do you feel about taking a quick call?
Sure.
Let's take one. Let's talk to David in Spokane, Washington, way over yonder west of the Rockies. Hello, David. Come on.
I'd like to point out to the guest about what the United States is doing right now. We are building these cities like Miami, New Orleans, and Galveston, Texas, and people don't have a very long memory about it, but like Galveston, Texas has been destroyed 5 times, and we keep having this macho attitude like we're going to show nature, we're going to rebuild this city. It's just like New Orleans, we're going to rebuild this city. And yet everybody that looks at it knows it's like the worst possible place that you could put a city, you know?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The hurricane season just seems to be really commencing now with two active hurricanes in the Atlantic. Ernesto is now entering sort of the door into the Caribbean, or about to. And Florence is just a tropical storm just kicking off of the African coast and moving west, and you know, you get this sequence of storms moving from the African coast west towards the Caribbean through this season. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. It looks like the path of Ernesto may actually take it into the Gulf of Mexico, but it's a little too early to tell.
Okay, thanks, David. And what about Christian in L.A.?
Hello, how you guys doing? I want to make it real quick. I'm a college student, and I'm 38 years old, just celebrated my 38th birthday, and I've been really emotionally torn of just who to vote for. Like you've been discussing, I think really Barack Obama has been nothing but a disappointment. His whole campaign thing that he ran on hope and change was almost a practical joke. I don't trust Romney. I think I've noticed a lot of people in this country have become totally fed up with both parties. And also, you know, because obviously this is not going to be over overnight. Do you think this will last for another 5 or even 10 years? Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel?
No, I don't think it's going to last a very long time. I think that, you know, we will see people express their political dissatisfaction sooner rather than later. The interesting thing is that there are absolutely no figures who have really stepped forward who people, you know, identify as having real leadership qualities. And that's an amazing thing. This is like the 1850s, you know, where every political leader seems to be like Millard Fillmore or Franklin Pierce, you know, these non-entities who most Americans have even forgotten about. But, you know, when in my blog, even though I voted for President Obama last time around, you know, I've been referring to him as the Millard Fillmore of our time.
Oh, boy. Okay, I think we're going to have time for one more. Jonathan, Louisiana.
Hey, guys, I'd like to give both of your comments to this one. Okay, let's shift gears a little bit. With America's surveillance on its own citizens, do you guys think its purpose is to have America incriminate itself over the open telephone lines, transcribing every telephone call?
I think there's a lot of room for mischief with all of the surveillance that is possible to go on, both in the internet and with drones and with the surveillance of you know, every electronic means that there is. You know, somebody the other day was describing a cell phone to me as, you know, it's not really a communication device; it's like a device to collect information about people. And I think to some extent this is true, but at the same time, as I said earlier in the conversation, I sincerely believe that even though these technological things have made it possible, I think that the central government is going to become increasingly incompetent and feckless and impotent, and even if they can gather information, they won't be able to do anything with it.
Okay.
Yeah, what's your opinion about that, since he asked?
What, the surveillance and all of that stuff?
Yeah.
I've got a real attitude toward it. See, here's the thing. I've spent a lot. I tried this observer thing. You know, I'm not really trying to give an opinion. I'm the observer. It's like, you know what? I just figured to H with that. No. The observation balloons are the ones that get shot down the first. So give me a fighter. If I have to be in the fray at all, give me a fighter. So I'll tell you exactly what I think about it. Close the borders. Start running your security procedures like LL does, because they run them the best, least invasive. Stop bombarding me with backscatter x-ray machines. Keep your hands off of me. I don't like it at all. You know, when you put in the rudimentary measures of security and they're still not working for you, then we'll go to all of this. But you know what? I resent being tracked on the net. And I'll also tell you this. Now, somebody will say, this is disingenuous. You're just trying. Every time I do this program, I have no end to computer problems. Every time. I have no doubt that this program is listened to, that I am listened to, and everything else. And I wonder if they've got the camera on. I wonder if they can see this. I guess we'll find out. I don't like it at all. It's completely unnecessary. I do not understand why anybody feels this level of security and invasive behavior is necessary, unless they figured out that laissez-faire attitude of, you know, first it was, you know, how many murders beat the rap because somebody forgot to read them their Miranda rights. So then it morphs into, well, you know, there's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, and they're giving everybody probation. And it turns into a revolving door thing where really letting these criminals in and then back out of prison becomes tantamount to protecting an investment for, you know, bondsmen and criminal defense attorneys. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And now facial recognition. They rolled out iris scans in Mexico. It's, to me, it's absurd.
Well, you know, one of the subjects of my book, Too Much Magic, is the diminishing returns of technology. And, you know, what happens is we devise these very elegant systems for doing a certain job, and then they fail spectacularly. For example, we spent, I don't know, countless billions of dollars computerizing every phone system in America, and the net and we did it to improve communication. And the net result of all of that computerization is now it's impossible to get a live human being on the phone.
Well, that's for sure. It's certainly not.
I mean, it shows you how
within a couple of thousand miles.
It shows you how technology blows back with you know, unexpected consequences, and that one's funny. you know, but we don't, you know, some of these other things are not so funny.
Well, isn't that the way it always is? Isn't there blowback to just about everything we do? I mean, doesn't Newton's law of always the equal and opposite reaction every time, in every way, in everything?
Sure, you make a choice, and there will be consequences.
All right, you have to leave us with something happy.
Well, I think that we are a brave and resilient and resourceful people. We've gotten a little distracted. We've gotten a lot distracted over the last couple of decades. And, you know, we need to man up, and we need to start paying attention, and we need to get comfortable with reality. And we need to discover that the way to be a hopeful person is to demonstrate to yourself that you understand the signals that reality is sending you, and that you can respond intelligently. And you know, I think that's going to be what gets us through this bottleneck of human history.
All right, you've put how long has your book been out?
About 3 weeks.
About 3 weeks. So, are you going on tour? What are you doing?
Actually, I'm not. I've got to have a surgery on Thursday. I have one of those metal-on-metal hip implants.
Oh, no, not the ones I'm seeing about on TV.
Yeah, it gave me cobalt poisoning. And
is that all?
It actually did not destroy the tissues near it, but I'm lucky. I just got cobalt poisoning, but that's not very pleasant, I can tell you. And I'm going to be on the road to recovery after Thursday. But, you know, it's an enormous interruption in my life.
Oh, yeah. How long? What's your downtime on that going to be, like 3 weeks, something?
Oh, yeah, somewhere between 3 and 6 weeks. You know, I think I'll be able to, you know, discharge a lot of my normal duties and stuff, but I'm going to be hobbling around a bit.
Cobalt poisoning.
Yeah, well, it's a cobalt chromium alloy. And, you know, the parts rub together and they shed particles into your body.
And then they get into your bloodstream?
Yeah, into your body, or get into your system. And
oh my gosh!
So you know, my cobalt level turned out to be extraordinarily high. I was mystified. I really didn't know what was wrong with me. I thought I had Lyme disease. I didn't know what was going on. But you know, if you do a search for some of the symptoms on the internet, it does point to this particular problem. And when I did get the blood test for cobalt and chromium, they both came back very high. So I'm heading to the OR.
Oh boy! Well, we certainly wish you the best with that. And
thanks.
You know, it would be nice to talk to you before 2019.
Check in with me.
Well, I'll do that. I'll visit your blog frequently. And now, your first book, The Long Emergency, that's still available, yeah?
Oh yeah, sure. It's out in paperback, published by the Atlantic Monthly Press. As is Too Much Magic. The subtitle of Too Much Magic is Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation.
Well, that sounds pretty darn good. David, how much time we have? We got 2 minutes.
Yeah.
One Parthian shot for you, James Howard Kunstler. Let him have it.
One Parthian shot. Well, about the best group of professionals that I had dealings with over the last 10 years were a group of people called the New Urbanists. And they were a group of people, architects, urban planners, developers, who dedicated themselves to reforming the way we build things in America, especially the way we arrange things in the landscape, and building places that people will really be able to care about. And I think that they have produced a great body of work. They were the ones who jumped into the dumpster of history and retrieved a lot of principle and skill that was thrown away by three generations of planners and architects.
It was a pleasure being with you tonight.
And they're going to help us rebuild America.
All right. James Howard Kunstler, take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you next time. You know, everybody, there are many things we can cling to make ourselves feel a little better, deal with the changes. But the best seems to me to be our faith in each other. You know, maybe it's going to take a little adversity to reawaken our humanity. Do not give up. I know you won't. We'll make it, and we'll make it in spades. And that's a good thing. For ships, Captain George, Nori, Lisa, Lyon, good grief, everybody. It's such a big crew, and I've run us all the way up to the end of the break. Everybody here at Coast to Coast AM, thank you very much for being with us tonight. And as far as I'm concerned, your humble narrator and host, John B. Wells, until next Saturday night and beyond, be well.